Welcome to Populous. This is episode 24. I'm Steve Hafer, and with me, he's the Q to my M. It's Kirk Trutner. How you doing, Kirk?
I'm doing good. Today's episode is brought to you by the letters Q and M and the number 007. How are you? Welcome, everybody. This is the episode, as we've kind of just alluded to, where Steve and I are going to debate the top 10 list of best James Bond theme songs. And then as an added bonus, we're going to talk some about the great universe of Bond supporting characters in the second half of the show. So we've been doing a lot of bondage lately.
Ah, nice. And that's right. That is what this episode is. This episode is also the episode that hasn't quite happened when it was supposed to happen. We had a little bit of a delay. We thank everybody for their patience. And that's because our lovely Kirk had to go under the knife. He had a headectomy. No, wait, what did you have?
No, I had some work done on the old deviated septum, which is now no longer, it's an undeviated septum.
Yay.
Which you very, very rarely hear about. Yeah, so I can breathe through my nose for the first time in about 40 years. And the last week or so has just been kind of being on the mend from that. So I appreciate everybody's patience, but it really gave Steve and I a chance to dive into a topic that is so full and so rich. And I had so much fun. I know we always say this, but I had so much fun. What about you?
Yeah, no, I had fun with this too. I tend to love the movie shows that we do and the music shows that we do. And once again, here it is combining the both, like it was for best baseball films. So kind of combined sports and movies, which we both love. Yep. So I definitely love this and so many good Bond songs. I love movie soundtracks as a whole and featured songs, and Bond titles are some of my favorites around. Got a playlist of them. It's great. What was the criteria you used to find your list?
You know, it was funny because you go through we all know, majority of the Bond songs, many of them are named for the movies themselves. So it's easy to remember. And, we can all go, oh, that's right. Tina Turner did this or Shirley Bassey did that, et cetera. For me, a good Bond theme song not only needed to be just a good song, but it needed to be a good Bond song. Now, what does that mean? For me, it means, does it match the tone of the movie? How well is it, effortlessly incorporated into the overall score? The whole idea of a leitmotif that happens is anytime you watch a Bond film, when you hear that da, 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 that repeating, four note track, that lets you know it's James Bond. So does it have that same kind of seamless feel as it gets incorporated? I think there's a Bond sound of jazz and brass and strings, that came from the very first recording. So that's really what kind of led me down that road. Not only is it a good song, but a good Bond song.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're probably going to say about the same thing in different ways. Like you said, it's got to be good music first, but it needs to capture the feel of Bond. Does it have that feeling of intrigue, danger, sex appeal, all that stuff. I also look for a good performance too by the person doing it. And one of the songs that I thought was going to be in my top 10 actually dropped out a little because the song almost seems a little flat. It's became my number 11. Does the song describe the film or the theme of the film? Like you said, that's very important to me. And also for me, since most of these are title songs, not all these things that we talk about may be title songs, but since most of them are, one of the tiebreakers for me is, does it really complement the main title design that was on the screen? And if people are interested in seeing those things, because they're kind of a work of art and that almost could have been a show by itself, you can find those on YouTube.
The legendary Maurice Binder.
Yeah, or Daniel Kleinman, who followed him, does fantastic work too. Both those guys, geniuses for sure. So yeah, that's my criteria. So like I said, I think we're saying a lot of the same thing, just in a little bit of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole idea of a theme gets changed. It needs to get reinvented. As Bond has been reinvented.
Correct.
So I looked at that. How did you make the segue? How did you introduce the new guy? I've got four of my songs are ones that introduced new Bonds.
Right.
And how was that handled? How did the composer handle it? And the last thing for me, just the artist and the song are never bigger than the film. And my note I put for me here was looking at you, Madonna.
And we might talk about that if we have time later, because I'm going to find out quickly what the like 2 to 5 worst Bond songs, what do you think those are? Because I think those are quite apparent, because to me, the Bond songs, even more than the movie, I think the upper echelon of Bond songs is a little tighter, a little more competitive of what is good. I think there's a little bit more of an even spread with the movies themselves. But where that drop-off happens, it's much more severe in the songs. To me,
it's precipitous. Yeah,
to me, the worst of the Bond movies are closer to the best Bond movies than the worst of the Bond songs are.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, for me, there's not a Bond movie I can't watch. There are about a half dozen Bond songs I won't listen to.
There's a couple movies where I may get a little bored in the middle or decide, okay, I'll go get popcorn and come back and not pause it. But for the most part, it's not like, oh, I can't watch this.
Yeah.
All right. Let's set the over under. I'm going to say, because it is, even though it is tight and competitive, I have a feeling we're going to have a few more commonalities than we think. So I'm going to set the over under at 6.5.
Ooh, that's a great choice. I'm gonna go over because I think it's gonna be 7.
Oh, okay. I actually think you might be right, but all right, I'll naturally have to take the under. And then on the exact matches, that one could be all over the map, and so I'm gonna say 1.5 on that.
I'm gonna go under.
Ooh, you only think you're 1, huh? Wow. You know what? I tend to agree, but I'll be okay taking the over. I think our number one's going to match.
Yeah, we'll keep track. Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of the same songs, but I think we're going to value them a little bit differently.
Yeah.
You know, I look at my list and I know a couple of songs where I'm like, nope, it's not going to have any of those.
Yeah.
You know, just because while they're personal favorites, as well as what I think are the critical favorites as well.
And I'm going to guarantee you that there's going to be at least 2 that we do not have matches on. All right. And we're going to get to our list in just a second. But before we do, we know we have 10 songs that are on list, which means we have a lot of things that aren't on our list. So what are your unlisted songs?
I'm going to kill the 80s with my unlisted right now. So Aha, Duran Duran, and Madonna. You can sit this one out.
Well, I'm going to say right now, because this is something you're probably going to have, and I just want to get it out front, that the James Bond theme is something that's not going to be on my list, but I'm going to give it the due that it is the backbone of James Bond scores. And still to this day, a good James Bond title song tries to hit gold to where one of their phrases, whatever, gets added into the pantheon of James Bond themes, and, you know, will get repeated during the movie and even used in other movies. But as far as sitting down and just listening to it as a piece of music, the James Bond theme isn't going to be my choice.
That noise you're hearing are radios clicking all over the country.
No, they're not. They're agreeing with me. The chart topping of View to a Kill by Duran Duran, not making it. And the newest of the Bond films, No Time to Die by Billie Eilish, is not going to make my list. But we have a lot to get into, and you're going to start us off first this time since I started first last time. So, Kirk Treutner, take it away.
Number 10.
So, my number 10 is the first of one of those songs I just mentioned that I don't think will be on your list. It is from the James Bond film Casino Royale. Not that Casino Royale. This was the Casino Royale that kind of was done outside the traditional Bondian universe, the spoof that was done in 1967. The title track was written by Hal David and Burt Bacharach, performed by Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass, and it is a complete encapsulation of those wild, wacky, zany, spoofy spies of the 1960s. It is energetic. It's a lot of fun. It's catchy. It's unbelievably re-listenable. And again, I think it hits the absolute sweet spot for, again, that spy, spoof spy spinoff of the spy genre that included like the Matt Helms and the Derek Flint's and you know, even onto TV with Man from U.N.C.L.E. and a few others. Casino Royale is a lot of fun. The whole soundtrack's good. Look of Love from Dusty Springfield was included in that soundtrack, which was nominated for Academy Award. So my number 10 to get us started is an off the book choice of the Herb Albert and Tijuana Brass Casino Royale from 1967.
It is a fun song. It, I was going to give it a little shout out in our little unlisted segment too. You know, not necessarily as a true honorable mention, but I love it too. It's a fun song. I love Herb Albert, but, yeah, not going to be on my list. My first song to start us off, basically Bond movies are divided into two halves. As far as I've seen them, there's the John Barry half of, James Bond title songs and soundtracks, and then the post John Barry. This is one of the post songs, and it is the song from GoldenEye, which was the first of the Pierce Brosnan movies. It scored at number 10 in the UK. And what I like about it, it starts off sexy, mysterious, and it has a whole new take on the Bond feel, which we talked about, you know, a little bit just before. And it was the introduction of the new Bond, Pierce Brosnan. So it's a new feel for a new Bond. It's coming off of the two Timothy Dalton films, as we spoke about last episode, and the producers were hoping for a fresh start, and Tina Turner's rendition of the title track definitely helps this, helps their end. The song provides a great platform for Daniel Kleiman's titles, which are fantastic, and they really go hand in hand with each other. It's sultry like Tina Turner. It's provocative and powerful like Bond. It's GoldenEye. It's a fun film, and it's a fun song, and I like it.
As we just talked about in our pre-show, there's something difficult about introducing a new Bond or a new character or a new actor into the character of James Bond. There's always that desire to want to show what the new iteration looks like and feels like and where it's different and how it's modernized or what the changes are. As I mentioned, I had four songs in my list that introduced a new Bond. GoldenEye was, you know, this close to making the list for exactly that same reason. I think they chose the right artist, had a good song, good film. You know, it was a solid relaunch of the Bond franchise.
Oh, so you have four songs that introduce a new artist and one of them's not GoldenEye? Wow.
That's right.
I'm surprised. Just when you said that, I just assumed, oh, he's got GoldenEye too. Interesting. Well, then you may not be hitting the over on those commonalities there, buddy. We will find out.
I'm also glad you brought up John Barry because as my list goes higher, I'm going to be fanboying all over this guy. So if you don't know who John Barry is, pause this right now, go do a little bit of research and come back. The guy is an absolute legend in Hollywood and has written some of the best scores and best music that you can listen to from films. So go educate yourself on John Barry.
And if you guys don't know who Kirk Trutner is, you're about to find out in the second half of his list.
Call John Barry.
All right. Let's move on to find out what's next on your list.
Number 9.
My number 9 song is from the James Bond film Casino Royale. This is a replay for the West Coast. this time we're gonna bump ahead. This is the film that introduced Daniel Craig as James Bond. The song is You Know My Name, written by David Arnold and Chris Cornell, performed by Chris Cornell of Soundgarden. I'm going to be on the wrong side of a couple of these songs as we go along, disagreeing with popular opinion on them. And this is one of them. There's a lot of people. I don't understand the vitriol towards this song. I think it's terrific. It did exactly what it was supposed to do. Introduce this darker, grittier James Bond. It was a powerful rock song. It incorporated the signature brass that John Barry had introduced, you know, back in 1961. It doesn't hurt that the song is played over one of the best, if not the best, opening credit animations in the Bond series. I love this song. It's a great rock song. I thought it did everything it needed to do to reintroduce Daniel Craig. So You Know My Name by Chris Cornell is number 9.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what you're referring to. I'm sure you're right, and I'm sure you've read it about the vitriol that received. I think it was always fairly well received. I agree with you 1,000%. On how well it works with the main titles. I think one of the best opening sequences when you combine the graphics, the animation with the song, it's fantastic. And I just can't understand how you have it this low.
Well, again, I'm going to fanboy over John Barry, as should another host of a populist podcast.
Well, John Barry called me and he said, you know what? I hope you have You Know My Name much higher because I'm a fanboy of that. That's what he told me.
Okay. Did he spell it Berry?
Maybe. It's actually Rick Barry, ex-Warrior, is great.
As long as it's not Marion Barry, then we'd know why.
All right. my answer to your number nine is a song that you dislike a lot, I think, from what you said in our little prequel. And this is the song that also, as you described, was one of the songs that I wasn't quite sure if it was going to make my list. And it just kept going up and going up. And that is Sam Smith's Writing on the Wall from Spectre. It was number one in the UK.
Oh, you're kidding. No,
it was only number 71 in the US, but it did win the Academy Award, as Kirk mentioned before we began. It's possibly the most polarizing of all the Bond songs. I will give it that. But here it is at my number nine. And I feel, as a piece of music, it will continue to rise in my estimation and in a lot of people's. It has a complete departure from most of the Bond title songs, except it latches on to what was started from Skyfall as the new sound for Daniel Craig films. And it carries that tradition and that tact and that theme on beautifully. Some will argue that Sam's falsetto is not very Bond, and I hear that, but that's Sam Smith's style, that, and they hired him to be the performer. And everything else in the song and the performance is on point when you really get down to it. As a piece of music, it's done well. It's good lyrics. It's got a bad rep for its initial reception by some in the music media, but it's done very well, and since it, I think, really has better legs than a lot of the Bond songs, it's... It captures what it's supposed to do. It's a good song. Writing's on the Wall.
I couldn't hum that song if you held my family hostage.
There's a lot of simple songs that you can hum. I know you.
I am. This really surprises me. I mean, this is, I would agree with you entirely. This is one of the more polarizing songs out there, but generally it falls in a lot of the lists I looked at in the bottom third, if not the bottom 25% of almost every list that's out there. Only Madonna does worse with Die Another Day.
Nah, I wholly disagree. And it also depends if you're looking at some sketchy American publications that think they're music experts, maybe, but they're also placating to try to sell articles. A lot of the British press have now come around and they disagree. Look at the, you know, look at the overall sales. It's done just fine. I think it's okay.
And he won the Academy Award. I get it. I wasn't my cup of tea. Yeah,
and I'll be the first to, as you know, we've had many discussions on songs that have won Academy Awards, and the Academy misses, and they're politically driven sometimes by things and whatever, but almost never has the Academy Award had nominees that are crap. You know what I mean? They're at least decent songs. But anyway, I knew we'd disagree on that one. All right, let's move on.
Number eight.
My number eight is the other Bond theme that has won an Academy Award. You're setting me up here nice for my segues. It is Skyfall from Adele, written by Adele and Paul Epworth. For me, it's the best of the, quote, moody Daniel Craig James Bond songs, of like Writing on the Wall, like the Billie Eilish dirge. You know, this is the best of those. I think that performance, you were talking about artist performance earlier. I think that performance by Adele is on par with, you know, a Shirley Bassey, you know, Diamonds Are Forever or Goldfinger or Moonraker performance. It was big. It was powerful. It carried emotion. I think it really set the table nicely for the film, as we talked about as well. You knew exactly what to expect to go in. And you didn't even realize you were getting some foreshadowing with the lyrics until you saw the film as well. So I think it really did a good job of setting the stage. It fit the film perfectly. It was a wonderful performance. Yeah, that's it. Skyfall, number eight.
Let me rewind my response to that, to your last one. I can't believe you have it this low.
I can't believe you're pandering to the youth of America.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. There's a perfect blend. And I got to tell you, in my top six is kind of like my Mount Rushmore plus two really big statues next to the four faces. It's kind of a blend. I've got like two of the old, two of the new, and two of the middle. I think there's value all the way through. And I didn't do that.
Then you've got four wrong.
No, and I didn't do that on purpose. It's kind of the way it is. But to show you that I don't dislike the old things and everything, my number eight is the Shirley Bassey song that you just mentioned, Diamonds Are Forever. Number 38 in the UK, number 25 in the US. It did moderately well. Shirley Bassey is obviously considered the Bond song performer. She's done three, as Kirk just mentioned, was almost given two or three more. So she could have had as many as six at one point if they had
should have been given two or three more.
Well, that's debatable. I feel this is the second best of her songs. This is the film where they brought back both Sean Connery and Shirley Bassey. they kind of went in tandem. Great use of the title, painting an enticing picture of the allure and mystery and sexiness of diamonds. All great Bond themes. It starts off soft and enticing and builds to those big brassy vocals that Shirley Bassey's known for. The film itself is mediocre at best, in my opinion, but Bessie and John Barry deliver the goods with a great song, at least. The main titles are done by Maurice Bender, as we mentioned before, you know, showing a lot of diamond jewelry superimposed over naked Bond girls and the whole thing. It's a great song, appropriate for the title and very well done. What?
That's a great choice. I tried every way I could to find a spot for Diamonds Are Forever, but I just couldn't do it.
Oh, really?
But it's a great song. Yeah. I just couldn't do it. It's what I've got. But I love the song, and Diamonds Are Forever is the first one I saw in a theater. So that was kind of, that's always going to be my touchstone for my entry into the Bond universe.
What's your next on your list?
Number seven.
My next song is also the next song that I think I'm going to be completely on the wrong side of public opinion about, but I'm going to do it anyway. My number seven, so I'll just tee you up for, I'll be talking about it a little bit later on, is the Marvin Hamlisch, Carol Bayer Sager, Carly Simon classic, Nobody Does It Better, from the James Bond film, The Spy Who Loved Me. This is a great song. It's a really good song. It's not a great Bond song. And that's why I'm dropping it a little bit. I realize it has to be on the list. If I didn't, it would be Steely Dan and The Who all over again. And honestly, if you remember when we did Most Popular Cocktails, I hate martinis, but I put it at the top of my list because I had to recognize that the martini was the drink. Yeah. All right. In the same way, I realize I'm on the wrong side of this. The public loves this song. The lists love this song. I just think it's very milquetoast. It's too bad that the best film of the Roger Moore era didn't get a better song. It fit the lighter, brighter character of Bond, but it was just, it's always been incongruous for me. So I've enjoyed it. I think it's a decent song. I just don't think it's a great Bond song.
All right. In all honesty, because I love you.
You hear that out there? You hear that? Do you hear that? All those heads nodding in agreement with me? I hear that too. Thank you.
No, you're they're my nodding, people. But they're nodding with me because they see where I'm going with this. Because I love you. I get what you're saying and everything, but I'm going to, like you said, talk about it later. And I have a little bit of a different point of view. However, to share your definition of milquetoast and everything, that also fits my number seven a little bit, which is the Sheena Easton song For Your Eyes Only. It's a good, effective song. Half of the people might say, oh, but it just seems like a pop song, or it seems more appropriate for a music video, but there's something very Bond about it. It was very popular. It was number eight in the UK, number four in the US, nominated for an Academy Award. It's done by Bill Conti, who's famous for the Rocky movies and has done, you know, quality stuff and has directed the Academy Award Pit Orchestra for the actual award ceremony. Lyrics by Michael Leeson. It's very much a departure. It was a big risk, but Conti and Sheena Easton's performance delivered on keeping that Bond feel. And the lyrics, they could be literally from Melina Havelock, which was Carol Bouquet's character. It could be from her inner light dialogue of the film. It's another example of blending beautifully with the main title sequence. They really go well together. And in the title sequence, it was the first time the singer had actually been shown on the title sequence. I think they might have used a silhouette of Shirley Bassey on one of the earlier things, but as far as seeing the singer, being able to know who it is, this was the first one. It was definitely Sheena Easton. And it was done so well that Roger Moore even said that it was sexier than any of the Bond girls, the footage of Sheena Easton. He approved. I approve. Number seven, For Your Eyes Only.
Not on my list. Not when there's so many other great songs to choose from. It's a fun song. Again, for me, I think we both have in our number seven spots songs that we think are good songs, but the other doesn't think is a great Bond song. So
number six.
So my number six was another one of the introduce a new James Bond songs. This is from the early 70s. It's the first Roger Moore effort, and it is Live and Let Die by Paul McCartney and Wings, written by George Martin and Paul McCartney. It was a chance really for the first time to update the template in about 11, 12 years. Soundtrack we'll talk about in a little bit. Did a little bit of it in the mid 60s, but this is kind of the first opportunity to really go out there and change things. George Martin was the first person to write a Bond score in how many years? John Barry had done all of them. So he was able to take over. The song has a great hook. The song has great energy. McCartney and Wings recorded with the London Symphony Orchestra in the same room. So they're able to get this really, really good sound. It's a great rock song. It's a decent James Bond song. I mean, it's great in concert. It's a bit of a mishmash. There's part of me that thinks it shouldn't work, given that the film was riding the wave of the blaxploitation kind of thing and the Jamaican kind of thing. And then you bring in the white rock and roller who throws some reggae in the song and all that. But at the end of the day, it's McCartney. So it's a Beatles singing a Bond track. You can't go wrong with that. So wonderful song. It's a song I grew up on. It's a song that allowed me to say the word hell in front of my parents without getting in trouble. So Live and Let Die is number six.
Good choice. I will talk about it very soon, though. So you're really close in my estimation. And the mishmash that you talk about, I think, is actually the strength of this song. And I'm going to put it in a little bit of a different light. But yes, mix match, whatever you called it, it definitely is that. But I think it's actually the strength of the song. My number six is a classic. And this is funny. When we're doing my research and looking at other people's opinions of the Bond songs and everything, this is the song that jumped over all around the map more than any other song that I found, with maybe the exception of For Your Eyes Only. For Your Eyes Only. And that is the Tom Jones song, Thunderball. It checks all the boxes as far as some of the classic Bond things that you want and the feel, and it definitely represents the early days. But then for some reason it doesn't appeal to some people who are looking for the more modern things. So anyway, it's all over the map as far as the critics are concerned, but I don't care about them. I like it. I think it's great. As I said, my top six would really be my Mount Rushmore, and this is part of that. I don't see how you talk about James Bond songs without Thunderball being part of it. It's a great rendition by Tom Jones. The original songs were possibly going to be given out to Shirley Bassey or Dionne Warwick or even Johnny Cash, but they weren't really happy with that particular song, and they went with the one by John Barry and Don Black for Tom Jones. The original title was called Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang for the earlier versions, and that was based off of a moniker that was given by an Italian journalist of what they thought 007 was. They thought he was Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Luckily, they changed that. Thunderball's a lot cooler. After you take in adjusted earnings into account, Thunderball is the second most financially successful Bond song of all time behind Skyfall. That's pretty darn good, considering back when it was made. Very impressive. According to Bond production lore, Tom Jones nearly passed out at the end of his recording session when he was hitting that long last note. Jones even said himself that, "I closed my eyes and I held the note so long, when I opened them, the room was spinning." Well, he delivered it. It's a big note. It's a big finish. Done the way that only Tom Jones can. Thunderball.
Man, I envy you. You put Thunderball on your list. It's another one I wanted to try and find a spot for and just couldn't do it.
Oh,
I just couldn't do it.
Color me surprised.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, I just couldn't do it.
I thought that was going to be a slam dunk for you.
No.
But to be quite honest, I was getting suspicious, because if you had it, I thought you were going to have it 8, 9, 10, right, somewhere around there. But wow, right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Number five.
So my number five is the main title sequence from Russia with Love. It is the James Bond is back piece from Russia with Love, the main theme as an instrumental, and then the now familiar, hopefully, James Bond theme that was heard in Dr. No. Now, this is not the Matt Monro version that played over the closing credits.
Right.
And it works really well. It's got a fast-paced percussion back cue that starts with just a really bombastic kind of feel to it. Then you get the instrumental version of From Russia with Love. It's very lounge. It's very of its time, but it's still just very listenable. And then you get into the James Bond theme. This is where, you know, John Barry did not write the music for Dr. No. He orchestrated it. Here, he was able to write the music for the film, but not the main theme. That was Lionel Bart, who then went on to do Oliver and just a legendary songwriter. But again, it's got that Barry feel. And everybody agreed that John should put this together as the opening sequence because it built upon Dr. No. It introduced From Russia with Love and gave him a chance to show what this film is going to sound like as well. There's an alternate 007 theme that John Barry wrote that was built into the film. We're talking more about the soundtrack now. So this really served as a launching board for a lot of great music that served Bond past From Russia with Love and well into the John Barry era, which I think you mentioned was 13 films. So it's listenable. It's of its time, but it is incredibly evocative. It is the James Bond is back / From Russia with Love / James Bond theme from Russia with Love.
I respect the piece of music. It did not make my list. And its main title, the graphics and everything they're definitely a step up from Dr. No, which is easily the worst graphics of the main titles for James Bond's in my mind, just a bunch of psychedelic dots changing.
But it's a great sequence for 1961.
Yeah. But it looked like they didn't realize that, oh, wow, this could be great and this could be a thing. And they didn't realize that till a little later. And I think they tried to change it up. From Russia with Love's main titles still aren't great, but at least you can see the thought has caught them and they're trying to approach it differently. They're already thinking big picture, which is good. But good piece of music didn't make my list.
Ooh, our matches are going to be some.
Yeah, you've so lost that over under. Anyway, my number five was your number six, and that was the Paul McCartney and Wings Live and Let Die. The first Bond film to be nominated for an Academy Award. It was number 9 in the UK, number 2 in the US. And as you mentioned, it's the first non-John Barry title song to go along with the soundtrack, too. The mishmash that you talked about, I describe it more as it's really a musical suite. It's McCartney's rock version of what composers used to do all the time. It is a musical suite. It starts off with some complexity with that big opening attention grabber. Then it goes slow for most of the beginning, and it goes into those two big orchestral notes, the da-da, which they used brilliantly throughout the film when they're revealing a new gadget or a new dramatic moment of the film. Then after that, it goes to a frenetic up-tempo rock, then back to laid-back funk rock, which I think you call it almost, reggae. Back to its frenetic pace, then goes easygoing to strings and piano, then back to big chords and a big frenetic finish. So it really was a very complex arrangement and very well done. It was a completely new sound for a completely new Bond. And as we said, Bond has to evolve sometimes, and it does it cinematically. You need to do it musically also, and this was that song. Producer Harry Saltzman wanted Shirley Bassey or Thelma Houston to sing the song originally, but George Martin said McCartney won't allow them to use it unless he and Wings got to record it. And so there we are, Live and Let Die.
And why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Come on, Harry, Cubby, Harry. Think about this.
Oh, they Harry. Just said Harry. I think Cubby's in the back going, Paul, I want Paul.
Love it.
All right, it's Mount Rushmore time, the final four.
Number four.
And to start my Mount Rushmore, I'm going to bring up a song that was the first non-British singer to perform a James Bond theme song. This song was originally intended for Frank Sinatra, but he delegated it to his daughter. He told the producers he really thought his daughter, who was just coming off These Boots Are Made for Walking as a hit, would do a really good job of it. So my number four is You Only Live Twice, written by John Barry and Leslie Bercuse, performed by Nancy Sinatra. You'd be very hard pressed to find a Bond theme that truly captured the essence of the film more than You Only Live Twice. It's got very lush production. It's more subdued and a little bit more paced than some of the previous Bond themes. And it is sweeping in the subtlest of ways. It's interwoven with the rest of the soundtrack beautifully. The main theme of the title track was used in action sequences, romantic sequences, you know, tense sequences. And it was a perfectly 1960s performance by Nancy Sinatra. A nice change of pace from Shirley Bassey and Tom Jones, that big bombastic feel. In this case, the song is the star, not the vocal. So my number four, first face on Mount Rushmore, is the daughter of the chairman of the board, Nancy Sinatra, with You Only Live Twice.
This was the song that I was describing before as just missing my list, number 11. It had been on my list for most of the prep period. And it's, I think it's the song and not the performance. I think is exactly right. I think her performance is a little lacking for my tastes. I'm not saying it's bad, but just compared to some of the others, almost feels flat, as in musical tones on some parts. However, that beginning to it, what you describe, the da 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 da, I would say
it's iconic.
At least for me, from a very subjective point of view, that is my favorite of the Bond theme. I love that piece of music. It is beautiful. It's versatile. It can be used for, like you said, for romance. It can be used for transitional things, interludes. It's fantastic. I love it. So just missed my list. My number four is a song that you mentioned earlier as your number nine, and that is from the most recent Casino Royale, Chris Cornell and David Arnold's You Know My Name. Number seven in the UK, nominated for a Grammy Award. By design, it's a new Bond sound for a new Bond era, and they really wanted to break the mold on it. It's the biggest rock sound for Bond since Live and Let Die. Was in the franchise, and it's a perfect blend between the amazing song and the main amazing titles by Daniel Kleiman, as you mentioned. I think it's the best combination, personally, between the two. It's a great example of the song enhancing the titles and vice versa. They just work so well. Cornell said Tom Jones's approach to vocals in Thunderball and Paul McCartney's rock music for Live and Let Die were his biggest influences, along with Cornell's visit that he took to the film set and the screenings that he saw of the completed scenes to that date of Daniel Craig's movie. He and David Arnold wanted to capture the new Bond, the more aggressive, dark, emotional, and yet inexperienced Bond that they were trying to portray in Casino Royale. And I think they captured it perfectly. Is it new? Does it have all the traditional feelings of Bond? No, but that's not what they were trying to do, and that's not what was required. It is a new Bond. Daniel Craig was by far the freshest take on the Bond franchise of what had been happening before him, and it required a new song like this, and I think they nailed it. So You Know My Name for the new Casino Royale by Chris Cornell, my number four.
It's a great tune. It really is. I should have been braver and put it higher, but again, man, you look at all the lists, and at a certain point, you kind of go, all right, I don't want to go into Mob Rule, but you know, not everybody can be wrong. And a lot of the arguments were, you know, wasn't very Bondian, wasn't da 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 da. But again, when you look at the kind of hat trick, is it a good song? Is it a good Bond song? And, you know, even though it wasn't part of the criteria I put in there, how does it work with the opening credits? I mean, it's pretty seamless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm very saddened about Chris Cornell's passing.
Oh, absolutely.
I wasn't necessarily, you know, buying everything that he wrote as a rock artist, but I really appreciated the stuff he did. And I thought this was a really cool look at what might have been for him, a la Danny Elfman, you know, some other guys who have transitioned into doing both rock and movie soundtracks. So anyway, let's move on. What's your number three?
Number three.
My number three is a song that I think set the standard for how powerful a Bond theme could be and how powerful a Bond theme should be. And that is the 1965 classic written by John Barry, sung by Shirley Bassey, Goldfinger. Dr. No and From Russia With Love, you know, they used instrumental tunes to kick off the films. And I think this is one of those lessons they learned from the first two. Let's get this big, beautiful song. And again, we talked about how the producers can choose songs. Apparently Cubby Broccoli hated this song, but it was too late to do anything about it. So they put it on. Of course, it turned out to be the biggest song in Bond history. I think it still stands today as a quintessential Bond theme song. I think it set the template for songs moving forward as well. Movie Music UK, I went to their site and I loved something they said, which was, one cannot overstate how this title song established John Barry as the signature voice of the franchise, but also the practice thereafter of using the song medley as a primary leitmotif in the score. I mean, that's an important thing. When you think about what your impression of Bond is and what a Bond film is, that's a huge deal. So, you know, I know we didn't talk about importance to the series and all of that, but I think that Goldfinger served so many purposes, as well as being a great song and a great Bond song. And fun fact, Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin played on this song. Goldfinger, number three.
I had forgotten that.
Also, Shirley Bassey recorded that song in one take.
Yes, I knew that. That's amazing.
That's you know, stand up and applaud kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, it was two takes for the very final end. They used the vast majority was from take one, but yeah. Well, it's a great choice. It's a great song. Not going to talk about it just yet, though.
Ooh.
My number three is another song that you had lower on your list, and that was Nobody Does It Better from The Spy Who Loved Me, sung by Carly Simon, as you said, written by Marvin Hamlisch and Carol Bayer-Sager. I love this song, and I'll say why, but one of the things that just captures you about it is, as you mentioned, it's the best of the Roger Moore movies. I think most people would agree. It comes off that great opening ski chase where he's in the Alps and the Russian spies are following it on skis and they're shooting at him and everything. And he goes off a cliff and you think, oh my God, he's going down. Then all of a sudden he pulls a parachute. It opens up and the parachute is the Union Jack flag. And as that's going down, then all of a sudden the titles begin and silhouetted women's ladies' hands come up and cup around the parachute and the opening chords and musical strain of this song. Sorry. It's perfection. It's so darn good. Number seven in the UK, number two in the US. It's probably my personal favorite of the Bond songs, to be quite honest. But most Bond songs can get big and loud and brassy, which is the theme, but sometimes it's a little much. I love this because it stands out because of its simplicity. It's easygoing, easy to understand lyrics that are descriptively on point with a storyline. And I give that a lot of weight and I really appreciate that. It doesn't paint Bond in the usual way with the usual themes, but it's no less recognizable as a Bond song. I think when you hear the opening piano that leads into it, you go, oh, Bond song, you know, it's from a Bond movie. It works in complete harmony with Maurice Binder's title sequence. As I mentioned, it's laid back, cool, sexy. It's Bond. It's Nobody Does It Better.
I wrestle with this song. It's a good song. It's just not a good Bond song.
It is, because it painted it. It took its own foothold and it's perfect for the movie. It's so descriptive.
Well, it is the first song to talk about James Bond and not the film. You know, it was the first time it really talked about the spy rather than the story.
Right. Well, we're into our final two. What is your number two now?
Number two.
In our last episode, I learned a brand new phrase, and that was OHMSS, On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And my number two song is the theme song from On Her Majesty's Secret Service by John Barry. This was the first time Bond was reintroduced. So this carried some weight. There was some thought that went into this. What can we do? And a big part of it was not only how the film was shot, the big part of it was not only how the character was recast, but also how the music was going to take that half or full step up and celebrate the change as well. And what John Barry did, bringing in synthesizers at a very, very, very early point in how they could be used musically and where they were, you know, on the technological evolution of a synthesizer. What John Barry did with that synthesizer, not only for the Bond theme, but for On Her Majesty's Secret Service as well, was just remarkable. The song itself, to me, is cooler than cool. It draws you in with the new sound. It segues into the familiar driving horns. That you've got that brassy melody that is a hallmark Bond sound. And I thought they really recaptured that well. My favorite side story about all this was John Barry, you know, the whole idea is you need to use the title of the film in the song. but on Her Majesty's Secret Service is just really unwieldy. So John Barry went to the producers and proposed a Gilbert and Sullivan style treatment because that was the only way he was going to be able to get a phrase like that in. They said no, thankfully. Peter Hunt, the director of the film, worked with Barry. They came up with the idea of doing this instrumental, and it really is just an incredible reintroduction of the character, and has actually served moving ahead with the soundtrack to inform this last film, the 25th film as well. So it's got important. It's got quality. It's on Her Majesty's Secret Service. OHMSS is my number two.
Full disclosure. This was the only of the instrumental Bond title tracks that was in real consideration for my list. Finished up probably 12 or 13, but I love it as a piece of music. It's very good. I just, for me, for Bond, I like the vocals in it, as far as just separating what is my top 10, but great piece of music, no doubt. My number two is a song that you had mentioned earlier, and that is Adele's Skyfall from the movie Skyfall. Number two in the UK, number eight in the US. Academy Award winner, Golden Globe winner, British Single of the Year, written by Adele and Paul Epworth. It set even a newer tone for the Daniel Craig films than You Know My Name. Completely different than that. And it set the tone for what the following Daniel Craig films would be about. It moves into a darker tone for Bond. Mysterious, reflective, romantic. It heavily influenced the songs for Spectre and No Time to Die. Very strong musically. Starts with the foreboding chord by the horns, moves into a quiet rhythmic piano phrase, which Adele joins in. It builds into sweeping phrases backed by a full orchestra using recognizable Bond themes. It's just a really strong piece of music. The lyrics could be the voice of Bond. It could be the voice of M, or it could be the house, Skyfall itself. It all kind of fits with any of those perspectives, which makes it very interesting to me. The Huffington Post called it a brassy and soulful tune that fits perfectly alongside the works of Shirley Bassey in the oeuvre of James Bond title tracks. And I tend to agree. It has its place. It's also making its own place for the new stuff. And I think this is with the direction of where Bond may go. We'll see who replaces Daniel Craig. But I think it is going to be a little moodier, a little darker, and musically complex. And that's what Skyfall is.
You know, this song really did a great job of, probably the best job of telling you the story without telling you the story as you're watching the opening credits.
Exactly. You go back and you listen to it and you go, oh, that's what they mean. That's what it means. That's what it means. So it told you, but you didn't know it. Yeah. Concur.
That's exactly it. And again, I thought Adele just crushed it. She did a great, great, great job. For me, it's easily the best of the Craig Bond
Fun things. Fact, she was, as a lot of people know, she was very pregnant at the time that they recorded this. And so they rewrote a little bit. And so all these deep low notes were something that was easier for her instead of hitting her big, powerful high things that she can do. But now that she's not pregnant anymore, she has a hard time performing it live because she's just physically not that way anymore. And so it's hard for her to go down low. So it's a bit of a conundrum she built for herself, but great performance. Effective song.
Great choice.
All right, here we are. We're to the top dog, and I must admit defeat in the fact that I thought I knew what your number one was going to be, but oh no, that was your number three. So I'm curious, what is your number one?
Number one.
My number one, I'm looking at my notes and trying to find the cleverest kind of segue into it, but I'm just going to go with, my number one is the song you left off your list entirely and you announced it. It was like a Bond theme song foreshadowing what I was going to have at number one. There's no way the James Bond theme, the main theme of Dr. No, cannot be the number one James Bond theme. It can't be anything else. It's one of the most singular, recognizable pieces of music in popular culture. Nothing says Bond. James Bond more than this original theme, which was written by Monty Norman, arranged by John Barry. I mean, in 2 minutes, you get mystery, intrigue, suspense, romance, sexiness, all of this stuff rolled up into one song. And honestly, the guitar lick, which was played by guitar player Vic Flick, the best $15 ever spent in a recording studio. That's all he got to play that track. You know, Barry had written a couple of soundtracks that Cubby Broccoli had heard, and he liked that kind of surf spy sound or whatever they were calling it in 1961. And that's where that guitar riff came in that Barry brought into it. So again, Monty Norman recorded or wrote it. Barry arranged it. But it is, again, one of the most recognizable pieces in music and popular music history and film history. It's iconic. It deserves its own singular Mount Rushmore. That is the James Bond theme from Dr. No, written by Monty Norman, arranged by John Barry.
As far as important music to the franchise, as I stated before, very important, no doubt, the most important. As far as best Bond song, no, it's too short. They also hooked a bad bongo piece and a horrible Jamaican thing of Three Blind Mice onto it for the main titles, as you segue into the movie. So as far as something that you're going to sit down and listen to and over, I defy you to honestly say that that is a song that you listen to over and over and over and over for years as opposed for relaxation, for entertainment.
If I'm using your criteria as just a good quote song, yes, I do put it in playlists.
So when I'm driving around randomly, that comes up and it always
puts a smile on my face. But my criteria was not only just a good song, but a good Bond song. And this is the best Bond song.
Actually, you're wrong there. Ever recorded. Let me tell you what the best Bond song is, and that is my number one.
This is why you like going second. So you can always have this kind of, well, puff, puff. Let me tell you why you're wrong, Kirk.
The best Bond song overall is not even my favorite, as I mentioned before, but it is up there, and it is Goldfinger, written by John Barry, orchestrated by John Barry, and performed by Shirley Bassey beautifully. Number 8 in the U.S., number 21 in the U.K. It's Bassey's only Billboard top 40 hit. Strangely enough, how talented that woman is. That is the only thing. Certain songs are readily identifiable as representing a franchise, and Goldfinger is it for the Bond films. John Barry had lyricist Anthony Newley, who was a quite famous Broadway performer, lyricist, writer himself, record the demo for the filmmakers. Newley didn't want to do the soundtrack, really. He kind of thought that Goldfinger was kind of a stupid song, as you kind of alluded to. So Barry hired his ex-professional collaborator that he toured with and ex-romantic partner, Shirley Bassey, and the rest is history. The lyrics, the Midas Touch, refer to both Goldfinger's obsession with gold and wealth, but also to the fatal gilding of Jill Masterson in the film, the girl who's painted gold and died from asphyxiation. The famous long note of Bassey's at the very end of the song required her to remove her bra in between after that take one that you talked about. She had to go behind a partition, remove her bra, and they recorded a take two so they could get her on that note a little better so she could fill her lungs with more capacity to really hit that big long note that Barry just had her hold and hold and hold. Fantastic song. So much of the Bond feel. And like what you said with the James Bond theme, this song does that for me also. It establishes a feel. It establishes the template for what was going to come later. And to me, you hear Goldfinger and you know James Bond right away. That's why it's my number one. Because it has lyrics.
Okay, theater boy. Instrumentals can be just, if not more so, impactful.
Yes, they can.
I would say, and that's why I've got instrumentals as my top two. And as I look at my list, I'm right.
Are any of them written by John Williams or Mozart or Beethoven? No. Okay, moving on.
No, John Barry, who was John Williams before John Williams.
But he's not John Williams. All right.
And he certainly ain't Marvin Hamlisch.
I respect your list. But man, that is, I think, as you said, beforehand, that this is probably going to be our most varied list in the history of Populist, and it is. So that's kind of cool.
Which is so funny. When we do a list on baseball players, we land on, you know, there's how many tens of thousands of baseball players that have ever existed, or how many even thousands of great baseball players.
Yep.
And we still come up with the same eight or nine, but there's only 25 Bond
right,
themes.
Right.
And we only match on 50% of those.
Well, and that brings us to Unlisted Part 2, our honorable mentions. Mine, as I mentioned before, was You Only Live Twice by Nancy Sinatra. Definitely my number 11. You also mentioned her on Her Majesty's Secret Service. License to Kill by Gladys Knight. I like that film. That was definitely in there. Of You to a Kill by Duran Duran. I respect it. It's very poppy for me. But then the song that I think is going to keep growing everybody's estimation overall is No Time to Die by Billie Eilish. I'm not a Billie Eilish fan, but I think she's got musical chops. One, it pairs very well with the visuals on the opening title. Very strong. It's already number one in the UK, number 16 in the US. And I think as we go along, the musicality and what she talks about, how it pairs with the titles, it's going to grow in a lot of people's estimation. So that's as much as an honorable mention. It's also a watch out for this one, as far as I'm concerned. What about you?
I'm going to go back to the early part again. I'm going to fill in the gaps. Diamonds Are Forever just missed. Thunderball just missed. And even Moonraker just missed. Again, Shirley Bassey. There's just something comforting about her singing a Bond song. And I thought it worked really well. So those would be the three that were kind of bubbling under for me. I none of the 80s stuff, you know, the Rita Coolidge All Time High, that didn't work for me.
Well, Duran Duran didn't work
for me.
What would be your three worst Bond songs? Because All Time High is easily my worst Bond song of all time, followed by Madonna's Die Another Day, and Sheryl Crow's Tomorrow Never Dies. Those are my three worst Bond songs.
I didn't think Tomorrow Never Dies wasn't very good. I will completely be with you on Die Another Day. I think that is by far the worst song by a mile. The next one up is probably, you know, All Time High, and I can't blame Rita Coolidge. I mean, they just... How do you make a song called Octopussy? I mean, good God, you know, nobody could do that. So, you know, I'm still going to go back to Writing on the Wall. I think that's just an incredibly vapid song and doesn't serve. I mean, it's not a good movie and it doesn't serve the movie either way. I'm just not a fan.
Yeah, it's a good piece of music. Two other songs that I just have always had problems with are The Living Daylights by A-ha and Another Way to Die by Jack White and Alicia Keys. As a piece of music, it's an okay piece of music, but it just doesn't click at all with the Bond franchise for me.
No, it's the art becoming commerce. Let's get the best artists we can get in to market the film.
But I give them an ounce of credit because I think they actually had a point of view that they're trying to hit, but I think they missed like three steps in order to get to where they were at. And it's like, I don't know.
That's where I appreciated the producers kind of pulling back with going like a Billie Eilish. And that song is so well integrated into the overall score, which to me is one of the primary criteria for Bond music in general. Yeah. You know, the Bond theme is cool, but it also sets the stage for the entire film. When you're doing films where you've got like All Time High and you hear it like briefly in two other sequences, just instrumental versions of it, just because you have to, it doesn't work. But when it's integral to it and it makes sense and builds upon moments in the film, I think that's what makes a good Bond song a great Bond song.
Exactly. You talked about Herb Albert's Casino Royale on your list, and I said I was going to give that a shout out. I also want to give a quick shout out to both Matt Monro for his From Russia with Love and Katie Lang for her Surrender, which ended up in the closing titles of their respective movies. Both good pieces of songs, and you could argue that they could have been very worthy of being on the main title track, but you know, it all worked out fine for.
Yep. And if I can throw one in, I got to shout out Louis Armstrong and We Have All the Time in the World.
I knew you were
going to. And all of a sudden, well, come on. Not only was it a great song, last one he ever recorded, but it resonated enough.
Yeah, I don't think it's a great song.
That they used it predominantly and foreshadowed in No Time to Die.
I know.
Great song.
I think within the movie of Honor Majesty, it was just too on the nose. And it was just,
Dude, if I ever get married, you are singing this song at my wedding.
I'm going to be real drunk.
You'd have to be.
All right.
What else is new?
I have one more question for you, which is an actual
blindside.
And for this quick blindside, I've been talking about, we could have done a whole episode of what are the best main titles, you know, song and graphics combined. But so real quick, what would you say are the three best blending of song and main title graphics?
Casino Royale, the Daniel Craig.
Agreed.
One. That is phenomenal. I thought Diamonds Are Forever was a really nice,
yeah, that is nice
combo. And I will also go with Goldfinger.
Okay.
Because again, to me, it set the template. Yeah. I mean, if it was that good that it inspired, you know, homages and copies down the road, that's got to tell me it was pretty good.
I love Maurice. I love Maurice Binder's work, and I don't ever want to poo-poo because, especially back in the day, he was generations ahead of the game. But I think Daniel Kleiman he has so much more at his disposal, but he does a great job with it. So I'm actually going to put for my number two, I agree with you on Casino Royale easily. I'm going to say No Time to Die is the visuals are so good. And the little homages and the showing of the history of, you know, Bond films and or Bond coming up to it was very cool. I really liked it a lot. And then I'd say either Nobody Does It Better or GoldenEye. One of those would be my third one, probably. I just like the blending there. All right. Good choices. Well, that brings us, before we take a quick break, to
the Populist,
where the listeners had a chance to let their voices be heard on this. And
what did he say?
Exactly. It was a little more than he, but it wasn't a whole lot. We have no number 10 because we had a two-way tie for number 9, and that was with You Only Live Twice and GoldenEye. No number 8 and 7 because we had a three-way tie for number 6, and that was Diamonds Are Forever, Goldfinger, and James Bond Theme. Wow, both your and my number 1 all the way down to number 6 for the listeners. No number 5 or 4 because there was a three-way tie for third place, and that was You Know My Name from Casino Royale, For Your Eyes Only, and Skyfall. Number 2 was Nobody Does It Better, and number 1 was Live and Let Die. So that was the listeners. I think they were...
Would you agree with the statement that Live and Let Die is the best casually known Bond theme?
In a manner of speaking, yes. And I think our listeners' poll here, you can see a slant toward things that were all very successful on the pop charts and on, you know, radio and everything. There was definitely a theme there. Yeah, you know, probably.
But if you're walking down the street and you stop somebody and say, name a James Bond theme.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 6 out of 10 say Live and Let Die.
I think that's a pretty good guess. I think that's about where it'd be.
Again, it was a Beatles singing a Bond song. Yeah. I mean, you don't get much bigger than that in 1972.
Yeah, I think older people that you talk might mention Goldfinger, but
I think
if you're taking a ramble
easy
sampling,
one word answer.
Yeah, ramble sampling, I think Live and Let Die might be that song for sure.
But if they thought about it, they would say the James Bond theme.
Yeah, sure.
See, you agreed with me.
No, I was being
mark that down, people.
Very sarcastic.
120.11. Steve agreed with me on that.
I was being very sarcastic as I was popping another cork on another bottle. Anyway,
have you met me?
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna be right back, and when we do, we're gonna have bonus content. We're going to have an abbreviated second half, and we're going to talk a little about supporting characters.
Bonus.
Be right back. Hey, everybody. This is Steve talking to you from after we recorded, and we might have intended to have a quick, short second topic, but then we got talking about the subject way too much. After all, it is us, and now we'll be releasing a second bonus episode in just a couple of days.
Watch for it, and
we'll bring you the discussion of Bond supporting characters then. So until then, thanks for listening. See you soon. Bye.